Welcome to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast with your host, Dr. Yoni Rosenblad. Today, we dive into the world of strength training and rehabilitation at the Division 1 level with special guest, Nicole Shattuck. In this insightful session, Nicole shares her expertise and experiences as a Division 1 athlete, offering valuable insights for athletes, coaches, and sports physical therapists alike. Join us as we explore the rigorous demands and best practices of strength training and rehabilitation in collegiate athletes. Nicole discusses effective training protocols, injury prevention strategies, and the integration of rehabilitation into a high-performance training regimen. Whether you're a Division 1 athlete, a coach seeking to enhance training programs, or a sports physical therapist working with elite athletes, this episode provides valuable knowledge and practical tips to optimize performance and mitigate injuries at the highest level of collegiate sports. Let's jump right in.
Hey guys, welcome back to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast. This conversation with Nicole Shattuck, who is the Duke Sports Performance Lead and the head strength and conditioning coach for their women's lacrosse team, amongst other sports, including their track and field, was really eye-opening. We get into what makes lacrosse athletes unique, what makes them special, and how to train those athletes and how to rehab those athletes. Common injuries, including the dreaded lax back or spondylolisthesis, which is so well covered by the physical therapist here at True Sports. We dive into how they deal with it at Duke, exercises to prevent it, exercises to rehabilitate it. Nicole was the strength and conditioning coach at Bucknell University before she went down to Duke University, go Terps. And she was a part of the Southern Conference Championship in 2018 at Wofford College as well. She brings a host of experience and knowledge and know-how. She talks about the art of strength and conditioning as well as the science of strength and conditioning. I really encourage you guys to share this conversation with not just the lax rats of the world, but if you want to be an outstanding sports physical therapist, you're going to learn how throughout this conversation. So give it a listen, share it, give us a five-star review wherever it is you're listening. We can't wait to hear from you. Thank you guys so much for all the support. We're growing like wildfire. So keep sharing your knowledge, keep sharing your wisdom, keep sharing your feedback. Without further ado, here is Coach Nicole Shattuck. Let's rock and roll. Welcome back to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast. I got Coach Nicole Shattuck, who is a strength and conditioning specialist, expert director of strength and conditioning at, are you at Maryland or UNC? Where are you a strength coach?
Duke. Have you heard of them?
yeah, I think it's somewhere in Carolina.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard. I won't hold that against you, but I've heard unbelievable things about your acumen, about your interpersonal skills, about your programming and clinical skills, as we would say in sports PT. What I really want to dive into is the way you look at programming and programming for the Division I athletes. So why don't you give us a high level there? How do you approach programming for some of the world's best lacrosse players and athletes and by and large?
Yeah, so I am very fortunate to work at this level and with this group of athletes specifically. And I tell them, you know, the first thing is I'm not going to make you a better lacrosse player, right? Like that's your coach's job. You're already doing a good job at that, but I can help get you stronger, get you faster, and make you a little bit more resilient, right? So when I look at a student athlete, you know, you got to consider the athlete as a whole, right? We need them to squat, hinge, push, pull, carry. We want them to move well in all planes because lacrosse players use all of those planes. And then it's more breaking down those movements and those variables of, all right, they're going to have the ball. And as they cradle, what are their arms doing? They're in, you know, once we get into the season and practices and stuff like that, man, their arms are a lot more sore than they were over the summer, right? Sure. So it's building up certain areas and knowing that as they're shooting, they're planting, right? If I'm a right-handed player and I'm shooting righty, I'm going to plant. There's a lot of eccentric load on that plant leg. And as they follow through, what kind of muscles, what kind of core control, the internal rotation of the hips, right? So we got to look at all of those things. And so I guess the physiological requirements of a lacrosse player have to do with, you know, the long pass from the defense, those quick shots. And then for the goalies, anybody who knows me, I kind of get I nerd out about goalie world because that is such a different position compared to those field players, right? So I kind of address that in a little bit different way. And ultimately, what that's going to come down to is the metabolic needs of those different positions, right? I think when I came into this position, right, I had worked with a couple different lacrosse teams at the D1 level previously, which was great experience trying to get, you know, involved in it. And the reason I love being a part of this sport and this culture is because the coaches have really allowed me kind of all of those, like all that leeway, pretty much. I am fortunate to work with head coach Kirsten Kimmel and her staff here. And, you know, when I got here, it was pretty much, it wasn't said, but she pretty much gave me everything I asked for in terms of time, in terms of, you know, I had full control and I still do full autonomy over the programming. Of course, it's a conversation, but, you know, it was pretty much mine to lose, and been very happy with the results so far. So,
well, I think that's a really good way of looking at the lacrosse athlete. I love the way you break down the lacrosse athlete and how specific you get with keepers in general, or specifically. Do you look at other positions like that? Do you look at attack different than you do defense?
Yeah, so that was one of kind of like the fun projects I got to do when I first got here is, you know, meeting with the coach, I give them a piece of paper and say like, hey, you know, where can I help this program in terms of strength, in terms of mobility, in terms of speed, power? Like, what are your expectations? You know these athletes, and now I'm going to get a look at them as well. And how can we bring that all together, right? And so part of the conversation is knowing, well, we want middies to be able to go 5 to 8 minute shifts. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's taking a look at the field and saying, if the attackers can't go past the restraining line, their field size is a little bit shorter, but we still need them to be faster because, coach, what's your strategy? Well, we want to ride, right? We want to play, you know, if we turn the ball over.
That's a press. For those listening that don't know LACS, that's a press. As I've probably learned recently, but yes. Okay. You want to ride?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we want to be able to put some defensive pressure when they're trying to clear the ball out of their defensive end and transition to their offensive end. So that's how our attackers, they're not necessarily going to be playing defense, but if we're going to put pressure on their players, we want them to be able to catch up to them, right? And so part of that is understanding the strategy of the game that the coach wants to play and then saying, okay, like how do you want to attack? Like what's your strategy? Are you trying to score goals in transition? Meaning once we take it from our defensive end, clear it up the field, are we just trying to get right into it, or are we trying to settle down and run some plays? And so we do a little bit of both.
And so how does that translate to what you prescribe in the weight room?
Yeah, absolutely. So looking at our attackers, they do a couple things where, right, like we're moving laterally a lot to get around our defender. So it's understanding that movement and saying, okay, I need to be able to go in towards my defender and evade to create space. So I need to accelerate and then decelerate and backpedal and then make a move around them. I need to be able to dodge effectively. So that's more of like a lateral bound, quick. Or is it something where I'm just quickly repositioning my hips, planting my foot, and then going around? So there's a couple different dodges. They do roll dodges. They do picks. And part of that was asking the athletes kind of, hey, how do you move? Like, what do you call this? And getting a little bit more embedded in it. Then they also do something called a crease dive, which isn't necessarily if they're going around the crease, they don't necessarily jump in through the crease, but they'll sprint around it. So one of my low attackers, which is somebody who goes kind of behind the crease, they may be facing the goal, like the backside of the goal, and then they're going to try to shake their defender and go really hard. And so that's a curved sprint. So that's something that I get a lot of my attackers to do. First, we'll start around the draw circle, because that's a really big circle. In an angle that you feel more comfortable with, then we shorten it a little bit. We go around the 8 meter, then we go around the crease, right? We tighten it up. My defenders, a lot of what they do is they're reactive, right? So, and I was putting them through all sorts of footwork, and then one of them looked at me and said, you know, Nicole, our coach tells us if we cross our feet over, we're doing it wrong. I'm like, oh yeah, like you've already lost. So that I still have to teach them certain skills so they have them in their toolbox, but I don't focus as much attention on certain things like a, you know, crossover step necessarily. I may introduce it and then we'll move on from it quickly because I know that they are, have the ability to do it. But when they're moving, they have to have their arms extended to a certain point. So what kinds of isometrics are we doing? How are they moving laterally and, you know, forward? Do they need to be able to shift quickly? But they tell me, they, you know, they're like, if the less I have the ball in my stick, the better. And I'm right. like, oh, okay. So, but they do need to have strong upper body for that long pass that they do when they're clearing the ball. So they still need to do, you know, push-ups, pull-ups, still got them doing bench press, a lot of rotational work, but I would say probably for my attackers and then my middies who are going to play both ways. So middies will get a little bit of both on those elements. We'll definitely do a little bit more rotational work and a little bit more anti-rotation as well, because they are getting so many reps following through. Sometimes we need to switch the med ball direction. So a lot of my in-season work with med ball and stability work is less rotation, so more anti-rotation, and then reversing kind of what we usually do. But
that's really cool. I mean, that's such a holistic way of looking at it. Well, some of the points that just jumped out at me during that discussion is how specific you're getting in position, and then who's weighing in on this. So the coach is weighing in on it. And probably more importantly, is the athletes weighing in. That resonates with me because that's what a good sports PT should be doing, right? You should be interviewing the hell out of the athlete in front of you to understand their goals, to understand their deficits, and to understand their strengths and where you can double down. So that translates beautifully. And I think there's a lot of things that you can take out of that when either you're in a clinical setting where you're working one-on-one, or if you're dealing with injury prevention in larger groups where you're able to grill the people in front of you to understand what it is they want, talk to the coach prior, really formulate an awesome plan. You mentioned footwork, you mentioned field work, you mentioned med balls. Talk to me about strength more so than conditioning. How are you preparing these athletes to roll dodge, to cut effectively, to perform the ride from a loading perspective?
Yeah. So I would say that my philosophy has shifted a little bit as far as like lower body.
The sign of a good strength coach. That is a sign of a good strength coach. Okay.
So there's a couple ways I approach it. So in the fall when they come in, right, I don't assess lower body necessarily from a like one rep max type of perspective. It's more of movement based. And I do have some athletes who shouldn't be putting a barbell on their back, right? So sometimes
How do you assess them?
Yeah, so what I'm able to do is we have a ton of great technology here. So we have all Vald equipment. So we do Nordboard testing. We do the force frame. So adductor, abductor. And then we also have force plate. So we do counter movement jumps. And on a regular basis, more for like readiness type of stuff, I'll have them do regular counter movement jumps on a jump mat. That's just with the size of the team. I have a little bit more time. I think it would be different if I could do, you know, counter movement jump if it was a one-on session, like you guys might be able to every day, which would be helpful. But, you know, we do our intake with them. And then the PTs upstairs will also do some shoulder assessments with them, but we tend to focus on the lower body. So some of the things that we're looking for are on the Nord board, we're looking for some normative data, but we don't have a ton of women's lacrosse. We use the like soccer, women's soccer collegiate numbers that they have. And if we have people who are below a certain point, it's like, okay, we're going to kind of focus on addressing these needs first. I have heard of some schools, not anything within the lacrosse community, but I think more towards like track and field where, you know, strength coaches have done their assessments, especially with the Nord board. And they've said, hey, if our athletes aren't to this point, it's actually not safe for them to be, you know, taking on these loads at practice. So we just need to be careful with that. So we have some people that we kind of keep an eye on. And then what I'll do is I have a movement series that I'll do within our warm-ups, and I'm just looking for, you know, are you able to hinge properly? Are we controlling a counter move or counterbalance squat effectively? And that's just a body weight exercise. I have them extend their arms to create some counterbalance. Can you control it? And while you're descending, are you able to maintain your torso, right? A lot of what I do, it has to come back to, are you able to maintain your trunk essentially, yep. Or are you, you know, losing your core control essentially at the bottom of the squat? Are you dipping your hips? Are you bobbing your head? Or are we able to go through that full range of motion? So what I'll have them do is we'll start really slow, basic movements. If you're if you're a returner for me, what I have them start on is a barbell front squat. If you're a rookie, we go through goblet squats. And I'm fortunate to be able to split the group up in the first beginning weeks, is to say, hey, coach, can I get the rookies for, you know, a couple sessions, you know, so it's a smaller group environment and I can watch them as they move. And so that's just something that I've learned over the years and I've appreciated, you know, that I can do that in a warm up, that I can see them and break stuff down effectively. And then we kind of use our big movements to assess on a regular basis, right? So if I'm squatting, I usually start them on a box squat, like front squat or a back squat. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be able to control their torso and their lower limbs through that full range of motion, and then we can start to increase their range of motion, right? If I have the box height set at 18 and you can effectively execute to what I'm looking for and pulling the ground apart with your feet, your knees aren't caving, what's happening with your upper body? Are your elbows rolling forward, or are you able to maintain that brace in the upper back? And through those, just watching them and kind of going through with my clipboard and kind of seeing how they move, I can see where their deficiencies might be. Okay.
Well, this pains me to say it, but good on Duke for giving you the ability to break down your groups and spend time with the athlete. I think that's the number one mistake I see in large group settings, but by the way, all the way up to the NFL, where it's just a mass of athletes and one strength coach. It sounds like Duke, I would hope for $70,000 a year, gives you the time to spend with smaller groups, so you're able to see that. You mentioned a lot of the technology, and I'm a big proponent of Vald, although I think they get a little too techy. I mean, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but they give me so much data that sometimes it's hard to parse through to figure out what is it that I need to be focusing on. But when do you start using motion capture? Is that a piece of what you do? Because you mentioned the clipboard, that sounds a little old school. You got Vald, which is too high tech. Do you do any motion capture? Yeah.
I think there was a company that came through and showed us, and it was a really high tech piece. And we had looked at it, but I don't know if it was something that we were like, oh, we can get this.
Yeah, approved. With the naked eye.
Okay. Yeah, okay, so, gotcha. Yeah, and some of it was, you know, the scoring methods. I think our, you know, we have Duke Sports Science Institute, which is not necessarily, it is affiliated with the university, but not necessarily with our varsity sports teams. Like it's physical therapists, and I think they have NFL combine guys that'll come in. But they do a pretty good job. I think that we had hoped it would be something that instead of having our physical therapist go through and, you know, with our different pieces of paper, and clipboards, recording numbers, could this capture? And I think that we decided it probably would have just taken a little bit too much time per
athlete. I get that. Yeah. So I would recommend Uplift Technologies. They're really interesting. They're motion. They are markerless motion capture. Mm-hmm. I had one of their C-suite executives on. He made a compelling case for how easy it is to use coming out of the baseball world, because anything worthwhile in lacrosse is coming from baseball, little known fact. I think there is room to do that. It's quick, it's efficient, it's AI driven. But to your point, how much better is it than having a clipboard and using your eyes? And as long as you have the time or the manpower to do that, I think there's tremendous value there. So that's really interesting. How often are you going back to the plates? How often are you putting athletes through reassessments?
So we're trying to be a little bit better about that. Like I said, if I have that many athletes coming in for a session, so Right. Like I'm able to break down the groups in the beginning of the year, but then they're coming in as a team. So we're fortunate because now we have some sports science fellows. I do have interns. We, you know, our intern director does a great job of, you know, getting help for me and the other big teams. So that has, you know, increased the amounts of counter movement jumps that we're able to get. And now we have two sets of force plates. So we're trying to do it a little bit more regularly in this season that we have right now. I think our sports science intern is doing that, like game day plus two is what we've been able to be consistent with our weight room times. And I think we just need more data, but we typically do write the intake assessments. We'll do something outtake at the end of the fall, and then we'll try to get them in January. And if we're able to, it's less likely, but sometimes we say, hey, you know, can we get, sorry, my lights are motion activated. Sometimes we'll be able to get them at the end of the season, but it's less likely.
What's game day plus two?
So if we're playing a game, it's the 2 days after the game. So game day is like our marker for measuring. Is it a game day minus one practice, game day minus two practice? Gotcha. So game day plus one, plus two. So that's when they've been able to get in the weight room. So that's when we've just been able to get consistent with it. So.
True Sports Physical Therapy is growing like wildfire. We have 14 locations, soon to be more. We are throughout the state of Maryland. We're in Pennsylvania, in Lebanon, in York, Pennsylvania, as well as in Delaware, in Newark and Wilmington, Delaware. Like I said, so many more practices to come, and we always need outstanding sports physical therapists. Our treatment style is unique. We are one-on-one with your athlete for 45 minutes every single session. You do the entire treatment. You do the entire evaluation, and they are in state-of-the-art facilities where you have room to run, throw and jump and really get your athlete all the way back to on the field and better and stronger than they were. We also have outstanding salaries, comp structures, bonus abilities, 401ks, as well as a very strong continuing education offering, including in-house continuing education. And we're looking for you. Now is the time, as we are growing like crazy, just shoot your resume over to Yoni, Y-O-N-I, at True Sports PT, or shoot us a DM and we will hit you back. We will get you in for our unique tried and true interview process and really make a determination that this is the right place for you to grow your career and get your athletes better than ever. We can't wait to hear from you.
Okay. Is there room, especially like as you get super comfortable with Vault, to have athletes walk in, hit their counter movement jump? Here's your number on your counter movement jump. Here's a compares to your baseline. Here's what your lift is going to look like today based on those numbers.
I wish, right? Like that would be awesome. I think what we also have, we're fortunate to have Perch technology, which is a video-based capture system for velocity. Yep. And that is what I'm able to do more so in season now. It is our first season using it, but that'll help me, I hope, as we integrate it more to manage fatigue, right? Because, and if you don't, right, like Vald would be a great thing to do, you know, having that type of technology to say like, here, let me spit out this prescription, or are you red today? Are you yellow today? Are you green? And that's kind of how I usually go about it is if we know that the, so as far as like sports science and things that we do, like we try to be as comprehensive as possible, right? My student athletes get a reminder that they have a form to fill out for readiness by 10 a.m. every day.
That's awesome.
We'll take, and they like it. I think now that they see that we use it, and we do RPEs after practices or conditioning sessions, and I do vertical jumps on the jump mat in the weight room so that we kind of have a couple data points to see like, okay, so-and-so said that their, you know, readiness score was pretty low today for them. Their jump was low, man, their RPE was high. Has somebody checked in with them? Do we know, okay, she's got a couple exams, or has something happened in her personal life that we just need to be aware of and maybe back off a little bit? Or I think what we started to see was a couple of our scout team players, they were playing both the attack side and the defensive side. Their load was probably comparable to some of our starters. You know, they were being pushed, and I said, you know, we need to keep an eye on them just for safety purposes. So anyways, all that being said, it's I have a pretty good pulse on who may or may not be able to do certain things, and I give them options in the weight room. So if I say I want our lower body power exercise to be clean pulls today, if you're not doing clean pulls, you're either doing dumbbell squat jumps or you're doing box jumps. And if you can't do box jumps, you need to come talk to me. So I kind of give them a green light exercise, a yellow light exercise, and then red light, my body is trash exercise. So,
and do they determine where they are, or you determine what group they're in?
I usually have a pretty good idea. I give them some autonomy this late in the season. So if we're in, you know, month four of the season, I let them choose. Otherwise, I'm very fortunate to have athletes who are like, tell me what to do. I want to do it. And if you're telling me that's the best thing for me, I will do it. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, last year we saw that our defenders, it wasn't like a big drop, like a significant change for a counter movement jump would be 3%. And so we would flag it and say, okay, that's indicating some lower body fatigue, or it just could be a bad jump, but either way, let's keep an eye on it. Our defenders, we saw just a nice steady slope, but it was nothing that was really detected because nothing was more than 3%. But over the course of the full season, they had a consistent drop. And so what I wanted to do this year to stay ahead of some of that residual fatigue was say, okay, let's be smart in the weight room. I want my attackers to be doing this unilateral lower body exercise. Defenders, I want you to do step ups, right? Like, I still want you to have some heavy weight in your hands, but we're going to take out some of that eccentric load because you're getting, they get a ton of it on the field.
Sure.
And they have so many more decelerations because they're reacting. And so I would say that's definitely how, you know, some of the data has shown, like, here's how we can help you in the weight room. I don't even need a counter movement jump to see that. I don't need, you know, some of the fancy data points that Bald spits out. We know that you're
worn down. So I love that, because that's one of the weaknesses I see nationwide, or maybe industry wide. I remember very clearly during the last player strike, I think it was with the NFL, I had a meeting with an organization, and I walked in and I'm like, oh my God, you have the DARI system? That's amazing. And so DARI, for those who don't know, it's a room full of cameras. It's markerless motion capture, and it's $100,000 system, and it's unbelievable.
I think that's the one that we tested out.
It's incredible. It's awesome. Incredible. And one of the founders of DARI is a local guy, and just absolute geniuses, not just geniuses, but great at applying that knowledge. But I walked into that facility before this guy was there, and I'm like, oh my God, you have DARI. That's awesome. They're like, yeah, it's there, but we don't really use it. I'm like, what do you mean you don't really use it? My point is, it sounds like the data you are getting, you're actually operationalizing, you're actually putting to use. And that is fabulous. I think that's a great lesson for, just because you have fancy tools, you have to understand when to use them, how to use them, and then use them and make them inform your decisions. So along those lines, when we talk about informed decisions, what do you think a cardinal mistake that you see over and over from both the strength and conditioning community and my world, the sports rehab world, what do we do incorrectly when handling elite level athletes?
Ooh. That's a big question.
It's a big question. It's one of
my
favorites.
I think sometimes just assuming, right? We can't assume anything. And as much as I love to collect the numbers and how helpful that is, you can't get so wrapped up in like, okay, the load is this, the number is that, and you can't be married to the numbers, right? At the end of the day, you're dealing with a human athlete like a human being who is also an athlete, right?
Yep.
And a complex being, right? If I have 5 or 6 data points, that's cool, but you still have to talk to them. You still have to interact with them. And I ask so much of them. And if all I do is look at the computer screen and I don't interact, I'm missing the point overall. And two, I know that there's the art, or there's the science of coaching, but there's also the art of it, right? Like, part of what we do when we, you know, we analyze, we also have GPS, Catapult GPS, which is great. And it's helped a lot, but at the, like, when we're going through these numbers, if we say, okay, we can't have more than three times a game load in a practice week, well, why not? What if what if in the preseason and the what if we've worked hard enough to improve our capacities enough? Why am I just limiting myself to these game numbers? You want to do it safely, but if there's a way that I can improve my athlete's capacity, I want to be able to continue to build it. I don't want to necessarily limit myself. So I think that we can also get so controlled by the numbers. It's got to be this, it's got to be that. There's a lot of gray area. Yeah. And then you also have to be able to adjust on the fly, because let's say your athletes come in and they're like, man, I feel great today. Awesome. Can we push you a little bit harder in practice? Can we get a little bit more out of this today and accomplish what the coaches want? Or do we need to ease up based off what you're telling us? Because I'm not saying it happens all the time, but I think the first year that we introduced the readiness surveys, the athletes had already been doing a kind of readiness survey before I got here, but some of them were afraid to report their numbers because they're like, well, what if that keeps me out of practice?
Right.
What if the coach doesn't want to start me? I also don't want that either. Yep, you know, yep. So we got to be really careful with how we use the numbers.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think we see that tremendously. It's like this conflict of interest I talk a lot about, where you have a training staff, you have a strength and conditioning staff. They are reporting to the coaches. How do you get the athlete comfortable to trust you? How do you build that rapport to let the athlete know, I'm on your side, I'm here to help you, as opposed to I'm the parole officer and I'm going to shut you down if you give me the wrong answer? How do you build that?
I mean, a lot of it is educating the athletes. It's, hey, we're having our preseason meeting and, you know, I put up my slideshow. This is why we collect these numbers and this is what it's used for. And then they're like, oh, okay. Like, I get it. Like, this is what the big picture is, right? So showing them the big picture and how their numbers play a part in it, but then also just building a relationship with them. I think if I were, if I weren't at practice, if I, you know, didn't show support on the sidelines, if I'm, you know, I offer and I tell them, I say, hey, if you guys got a, you know, educate, like a presentation, you know, on your educational, you know, student side of things, tell me about it. I want to come out and see your poster project, right? Like, if they don't think you care about them too, then they're also going to be a little bit more hesitant. But yeah. I was fortunate, I think, within the first couple of years, is athletes knowing how these reports were or weren't used necessarily before. And then the process after I came in to say, okay, there's not going to be punitive damage for you not submitting your scores, but you may actually not participate in practice if you don't submit it on time, right? Yeah. Like, but we want you to be as honest as possible, because when they're honest and then we say, okay, we were going to do this in practice today, but based off the numbers and based off what you guys are telling us, I can't put you through this conditioning series. It needs to be this instead.
Yeah.
And then you kind of see them, and it's about, I think I heard an analogy once, right? Like, every time you build trust with somebody, it's a marble in a jar, a marble in a jar, a marble in a jar. And it grows just slowly, but over time. But it can be really easy to like crack and shatter that. So you got to make sure that you build it slowly.
Yeah.
You just got to be genuine with them and let them know that you're doing this for them.
Yeah, that's such a great outlook. And I'm sure it's industry wide, really worldwide, to build that rapport with whoever you're interacting with. It's so important when dealing with injuries, when dealing with performance, that you have the trust of that athlete, you have the trust of the coach. So I think that's really well put. Let's get a little clinical. What movement patterns, what exercises, even more specifically, have to show up in a strength and conditioning program for elite level lacrosse?
Lower body strength, gotta be one of them. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to start there. So lower body strength, I always have a bilateral squat, and that might be a barbell back squat, front squat, or maybe something like a pit shark. If I have an athlete who has like spondylolisthesis, can't have a barbell on their back, fine.
Why bilateral squat? I would have thought
total body strength.
No, yes, I would have thought unilateral.
Total body strength. I need them to move well and I need them to control it. So, and also, I mean, if you look, so I have a couple things that I'll do. I'll go to the sideline. I'll take a picture when we're doing defensive drills and I show them, I'm like, guys, this is the exact pattern you're in. Is this box squat pattern? That's the same stance that you got when you're in that drill. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I do. I'm like, yes, this is what I need you to do in the weight room too. So lower body strength, but so I'll have a bilateral and a unilateral.
Okay. What's unilateral look like?
Unilateral. Once we transition from our, I think October, November, the lower body main strength emphasis that I do in their preseason, right, all through the winter, not only because I feel very strongly about unilateral strength, but because I also feel a little bit more comfortable with them doing. So it's a barbell loaded reverse lunge. We do all sorts of unilateral movements, whether it's rear foot elevated split squat, whether it's step ups, but I really like how much we can load on the barbell reverse lunge. And if they're not doing a barbell reverse lunge, then I'll have them do dumbbells. I like that it's a full rate, not necessarily full range of movement, but it gets them to about the point that they would do for their box squat. And I'm comfortable with that, but that's also going to help immensely with any deficits that they may have. It's still going to make, I'm still going to have them under the barbell. So we get a little bit out of that core, and that torso, trunk. And, I also really like it for change of direction and, movements that you're going to get out of it. So,
okay. So that's lower body. So you have reverse lunge, lower body has to show up in a high level strength and conditioning program for a Division I athlete. What has to show up in their midsection, in their core, and what has to show up upper body?
Yeah. So I'll go upper body first and then I'll go, midsection. So upper body, everybody's doing a bench press.
How and, come? That's fascinating.
And our women's lacrosse players love big bench day. I know. So, so if you watch, especially the draw, they're in very much a barbell bench position. So that's what I always take them back to. But it's that upper body pressing movement that is just, I mean, for most of our defenders, I can get them on board with it. Our attackers, they may be like, all right, why am I doing this? But they still have to follow through on a shot. And because it has both pushing and pulling elements, right? So it's that strong upper body is going to help us translate more from the core, right?
Okay,
so
hold on, Nicole, let me push back a little bit. I'll just play devil's advocate, not like I feel one way or another. Ready? Okay, in the draw, yes, they start two hands on stick. That you can argue that they're in a somewhat of a bench press position. Immediately they're unilaterally overhead, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So where, like, defend that case. Bench press to prepare them for the draw, but very rapidly they're overhead one arm with a stick in their hand fighting for the ball. So how does that correlate?
Well, it correlates later in the lift when we do our overhead presses. Yes. So I totally agree with you on that. And my whole thing that I like to explain to them is it's not necessarily about the movement, but it is the adaptation that we're looking for. So that's that upper body strength, but it is a total body movement if you're doing it correctly, mm-hmm. and being able to control that weight through the full range of motion. So I love it. I think it's also one of my main strength movements in season because their lower body is so fatigued. That is something I can get, a higher neural stimulus out of them. So,
You had me at neurostimulus. Okay. Yeah. So if that's your defense and you do, just to be clear to those listening, you do get to overhead pressing. So that would translate to the draw maneuver. You mm-hmm. said when shooting, it's a push pull maneuver. I totally see that. Tell me where the pull maneuver shows up in the bench press.
So it's after, after the bench press. A couple things. So I say after the bench press, we also do a ton of pull-ups, and that is one of the things I'll assess them on. And we do pull-ups year round for their upper body pull movement. So when you're doing a bench press properly, right, this is one of the things that I instruct them on is bracing your upper back, your big squeeze on those shoulder blades, pulling the bar apart and bending it. And that's not only going to put my, body, right, my torso in a good position, but gets my shoulder in a safe position as well. And I want them to think that and feel like they are pulling the bar to themselves. We're not just letting gravity take over and dropping the bar on our chest. So we need to control it through that full range of motion. And that does include a lot of those lats before we're pressing out of it. So you do get plenty of lat engagement, but it's not necessarily what we're all thinking of is
lat load.
You're not pulling necessarily, no. But you are loading.
Yeah. You make a great point in terms of the way you coach that bench press. So you said pulling apart the bar, and I'm like, nah, I don't love that. But then you said breaking the bar. And so what that does is that forces external rotation around the glenohumeral joints. That forces the little muscles around your shoulders. Now you're talking my baseball language, because that's imperative for proper shoulder structure and stability, uniformity, both anterior and posteriorly. So I think that's a really valuable coaching point, that when talking about pressing, you're talking about pressing with external rotation to use our weaker external rotators, while you're using your primary internal rotators of your pec major and your, I want to go infraspinatus for internal rotators, right? And so that's really important. Same move, totally different muscles when coached differently. So I think there's a lot of value there. Where's the landmine, Coach Nicole?
The landmine. We use that for some of our lower body work. So we'll do landmine for, I have them lean into it for more of a curtsy lunge. So we're getting some exposure to different sides of the foot, right? Like the lateral aspect of it.
In different planes. I love that. Different angles, different shin angles, which show up when you change direction. That's how you tear ACLs, right? When you can't control your tibial angle. Hey guys, quick pause and a quick shout out to this new masterclass that we just launched here at True Sports Physical Therapy. Myself and Dr. Tim Stone put together a masterclass of ACL rehab, and we call it From Table to Turf. And the reason we call it that is because it's going to teach you exactly how to get your athlete all the way from post-op day one with the nitty-gritty of regaining all of that range of motion, with the tips and the tricks that we use here at True Sports Physical Therapy that gets our athletes better, faster, and stronger. And that's early. And then how do you progress that athlete all the way onto the field with a ball in their foot or a stick in their hand or whatever their sport is, and teach them how to accelerate, how to decel, how to change direction, and all the mechanics that go in there. What drills do we use to get our athletes exactly where they need to be, back on the field, and even better than before injury? And I want you to sign up for that class. Now, you can find it on our website. You can shoot us a direct message and just say, hey, send me the course. It's right now on sale, so make sure you sign up now. It is fully accredited to get you all of your continuing education hours. Sign up for the True Sports Masterclass ACL From Table to Turf. Thanks, guys. Okay, so I love that. What about presses, pulls, PNF patterns on the landmine? Is that in Coach Nicole's program?
Yeah, sometimes we do that when we're doing overhead presses. So I'll start them on a dumbbell, and then we'll do, you know, unilateral work with the landmine presses. I haven't done anything. I know I've seen people do like those rotational type of presses. If I have more like a smaller group of athletes, I'll do that, but it's a little much. And when I got everybody whipping it around, but I really do. And then we have an attachment. We'll do a Viking press. I haven't introduced that to this group yet, but it's an attachment that goes on the landmine. You can have a couple different grips to it, which I like. I had mentioned it with the landmine lunges, but, another big thing that I tried to focus on this year was working the, foot and ankle complex a little bit more, especially for our goalies when they're trying to move laterally. And, I think because of the goalie movement, and the position that they're in the cage, we do so much more for their posterior chain, their glutes. I do all sorts of like work capacity things for, we'll use the pitch shark. We'll have them do marching in preparation. We use the slide board a lot because, for them, it's about keeping those hips healthy, but like not necessarily like the glutes, or I need their adductors to be really strong too. Yeah. So
talk to me about work capacity. What does that mean to you, and how does that show up?
Well, work capacity has to do more so with like those quick fatiguing muscles, and it's going to be the glutes. And for our goalies, the position they're in, they're, you know, in more of a crouch position. It's quarter squat, I would say, and they're leaning forward a little bit so that they're ready. So for them, what gets really fatigued is their postural muscles. So we do a ton of scap work with them, a lot of pulling. I do a lot of pulling with the field athletes too, but really try to do a lot with their glutes as well. So whether it's mini band work at the field, or we're doing hyper extensions and reverse hypers in the weight room to build up, because you know the glutes fatigue so quickly. And if, you know, once that starts to break down, then they start to, you know, their hip, the front of their hips, that anterior part, they just get so tight and overactive there. So we really try to just focus on how much we're able to do. So I do a lot of sled pulls with them in the off season at practices, because again, we're just trying to improve like that, just basic. They're not running for me. They're not doing our tempo runs, but if I'm building their work capacity, it's going to be definitely more along the lines of muscular endurance.
Yeah. It's also interesting to think about, and I love that, because you're talking about energy systems. When talking about goalies, it's different in the pro world versus the collegiate world, because in the collegiate world, most of their job is sitting. Right? They're sitting at a desk, they're sitting studying, that's elongating their glutes, that's shutting their glutes off. Now we're going to put them in cage, they're upright, they're in their quarter squat, they're living on their glutes. And so you got to think about that a little bit differently, both from a warm-up standpoint, injury prevention standpoint, and load standpoint. It sounds like you really have that covered. I love your pull-up concept. So you're constantly programming pull-ups, it sounds like. How are you coaching those? What is the ideal form for a pull-up at Duke Lacrosse?
Yeah, so we go, so pull-up is, you know, we're prone, right? Chin up is supine grip. And when you're on the bar, you're setting your scaps before you pull. Once you descend, it's a full reset. I don't want to see anybody bouncing out of the bottom. Nobody's kicking. We're not doing CrossFit here. And yeah, all the respect to the CrossFit athletes, but I want to see that you can control yourself the full way down. So, and it was funny because I think that I had some athletes return for their second year, and I said, "Hey, why is it such a big difference in your pull-ups this year?" I was like, "Did I not count right the first year?" And they said, "No, it's just that you told us that we had to get our chin over the bar, and I think I didn't get them all the way the first time." So they even corrected themselves.
Love that. That's awesome. What's going on at their lower body when doing a pull-up at Duke Lacrosse?
Yeah, I tell them you can either cross your legs or squeeze them together, right? So if we're really trying to get that hollow hold, or that hollow torso, is you're going to have the best bet if you're crossed legs or if you're just squeezing them together. If you're tucking your knees up and you're kicking them, we are getting a little extra momentum, and that's just, to me, not a complete rep. So we try to keep them as strict as possible. And then we got a couple kids who I started to do, we tell them to pack a lunch. So I take a big resistance band and you put 5-pound plate on and you put it on like a backpack, and okay, now we got a couple pull-ups, chin-ups, neutral grip. And we have one athlete who will put a 25-pound plate. We have a belt that we can use, 25 to 45 pounds, I think she was working up to. I was like, holy cow.
That's amazing. That's awesome. And that's a big coaching point also. So when you do a pull-up at True Sports, we're really trying to coach that a few things. One is that hollow hold, right? You want to be in that pike position. And the reason that's so important to me, especially in this athlete, the athlete is now overhead, right? And they're controlling their lower body. They're controlling their midsection, staying in that pike position. That is, I think, the antidote to your previously referenced spondylolisthesis, which I would say is the number one injury in lacrosse, more so than ACLs, that these girls or guys are fracturing their spines because they're rotating and slamming into extension over and over and over. I want to fight that in the weight room, and I want to fight that with their hands overhead. So I want their core engaged, their anterior line engaged, they're holding their pike, they're in their legs need to be in front of their face, not up at a 90-90, but out in front of them. And that forces your rectus abdominis to kick on. It forces your lumbar spine to be fully supported while you're overhead. It's very hard to mimic that position with any other exercise the way you can with a pull-up, and it's going to protect the hell out of your lower back. Any other strategies? Not that I've given that a lot of thought. Any other strategies to prevent or possibly rehab a spondylolisthesis in the lacrosse world?
I think a lot of what we've done with our individuals is work on a lot of torso control. And that's not just with those individuals, it's with the entire team, right? I said that we would talk about the midsection as like the, and so maybe this is a good opportunity.
Thank you for focusing me. Yes.
To get into that is like a lot of it. I mean, a lot of my athletes in general, like that, we need to have some like lumbopelvic control, right? It's teaching them how, and just starting with like a cat cow position, right? Anterior, posterior tilt, but then how are we taking that? So a lot of what I do with them comes back to like DNS training, dynamic neuromuscular stabilization, is we start in a dead bug position. Okay, now we can take the dead bug bear bridge. Now we can crawl. Now we can do a bear bridge. Now we can take that to the wall. We do some wall marching. So how are we controlling our torso while our body is in motion? Right. Yeah. So then we'll do all types of anti-rotation presses. Are we engaging our glutes as we're doing? I have one that's called a tall kneeling Pal-Off press. So I'm in a tall kneeling position, but I'm squeezing my glutes and I'm pressing forward, so I'm not letting everything else kind of move. And I think with that, I just really try to focus on, you know, where's the awareness to that? Because if you're with me for like, what, 4% of your day, then you're going out, how are you standing? How are you sitting? I think a lot of the issues that we also see is, you know, if they're standing on the field and they're waiting while the scout team is practicing and they're all hunched over or their legs are fully locked out, like, how are you standing? What's your posture like? You know, so bringing some awareness to it. So, we do a lot of different types of plank variations. You know, how are we working our core control into all of our other movements, and just try to bring awareness to it. When I'm pressing up, am I tipping out? No, I want to be able to maintain that neutral spine, right? So part of that is also just, again, seeing how we're moving in the weight room under load. And if we can't maintain it, then we have to, you know, make adjustments for it. So I don't know if I've necessarily rehabbed, you know, we have our athletic trainer, we do have PTs upstairs who work with our spondylolisthesis individuals, and it's more so for them working around it. We have a pretty cool attachment in here. It's called the low bridge. We have Sorenex equipment. And so that I've really liked for that individual, because I can get a higher lower body stimulus out of her. And I'll do like reverse lunges with that, because we wanted to take away the barbell.
We've
tried trap bar, but it's controlling your body through that full range of motion. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think you've done an awesome job of describing the different energy systems. You've done a great job of breaking it down anatomically, lower body, midsection, upper body, things you focus on. So first of all, I'll just pause for a second and tell you that I really appreciate your knowledge base and your intent with all of your interventions. It's awesome. It's profound. We can learn a lot from that. I think that's why Dr. Austin told me I have to have Nicole Shattuck on this podcast. So good on you. That doesn't show up enough, I think. I want to jump to the Eric Cressy lightning round and hit you with a couple quick hitters.
Okay. All right. I hope I've had enough coffee for this.
I hope so. Okay. Here's what's important during this lightning round. You are not allowed to repeat the question.
Okay.
Okay. Who is the best lacrosse player you've ever seen? I see you wanting to repeat the question. You cannot.
No, I'm like seen in person.
Yes.
It's probably Charlotte North.
Why?
I mean, I've never seen an attacker move with such confidence, but also, she's a solid player.
She's a freaking solid player.
She's all over the place. And I even am fortunate to work with her on like the box team. She's so versatile. So strong.
Okay. So she's strong. Awesome. She's versatile. I saw her lose the national championship game here in Baltimore to a little school called UNC. And what I was amazed by her in that match was everyone knew what was coming. Everyone knew she had time and room and she was going to unload, and they still couldn't stop it. I thought that was just amazing. It was like Verlander's fastball. It's like, you know, it's coming. Here it is. You can't hit it and you can't stop this shot. And I thought that was really awesome. That's the wrong answer, however, Coach Nicole. The right answer is Cookie Carr is the best lacrosse player you've ever seen. So we'll just throw that out there.
I do love Cookie.
She's the best. She's awesome. The best person. And she's possibly the best athlete that I've ever seen. Who is the best lacrosse strength coach you've ever seen?
I am very fortunate to work with a lot of different strength coaches. And the first person that came to mind is Matt Nine. I've learned so much from just talking to him. And man, you want to talk about passion and somebody who has had an impact at a high level. That's the guy, Matt Nine.
Yeah. Okay. That's a hell of an answer. I met Matt Nine like 6 years ago. He gave a talk at like LaxCon. What I love about Matt Nine, well, what do you love about Matt Nine? His passion and anything else?
He's passionate, but he's also, I mean, that man knows so much about lacrosse, and he's, I mean, the culture that he's been able to build where he's at.
And I would totally echo that. I think he builds leaders. He doesn't just necessarily build athletes. And I think that's a whole mental side of the game. And there's so much there. That's a great answer. The correct answer was probably Brian Wilson, but that's a really good answer, Matt Nine. Shout out to Brian Wilson here in Baltimore. There's a lot there. I think Brian does a lot of what Matt Nine does. It sounds like similar to what Nicole Shattuck does down at Duke. What is the future of women's lacrosse as it pertains to strength and conditioning?
It's only getting better. I mean, it's the coolest thing to see. I've seen a couple more recently postings for jobs that are like women's lacrosse only. So that's the future of women's lacrosse, is somebody who acts almost in like a football or basketball type of role, where you got somebody who's there for warmups, there for cool down, travels with your team. And like, that to me is it's only getting better.
What would you say makes a lacrosse strength coach as opposed to a jack of all trades?
Probably somebody who is a lax rat at heart, I think. Somebody who, like, I never played it, but man, I'm in it now. Like, I'm like, this is the coolest thing. So I love it. You got to have a passion for the sport. And like, you know.
What's cool about it to you?
I geek out on the history of the sport, and because I grew up in upstate New York, so there's a lot of indigenous culture there. And so understanding how the sport has, you know, grown over the centuries, but I mean, it, to me, that's one of the coolest things.
Yeah.
And how it's still so ingrained in the Native American history and culture, right? So they're, you know, they call it the medicine game. So there's so much there to it. But also it's its own little world, right? Like I feel like I was welcomed into it, and now I can talk shop, and, you know, I know who these people are, which is really cool. And I've met some of them, and I get to work with some, you know, pretty amazing coaches, but pretty cool athletes as well. So
The medicine game, I love that. I went to, I got to work with Team Israel at the World Indoors, which took place on the Onondaga Reservation. And man, you talk about like eye-opening. First of all, opening ceremonies, they had Jim Brown come out and talk to us. And the way they celebrated his success and who he is as a person, and It was really eye-opening and awe-inspiring. It's really powerful. I love that, the medicine game. I also love the way this athlete needs to do everything across the athletic spectrum. They have to run like a deer. It behooves them to be big and powerful at times, but also their fine motor skills are incredible. The fact that, I mean, I revert back to the long sticks, but that doesn't show up in the women's game yet. But their ability to know where the head of that stick is when it's so far away from them, and their ability to control it from a fine motor skills, and then have the gross motor skills to run and to hit and to be powerful. I think, by the way, that sums up Cookie Carr, right? Like her ability to cover ground aggressively, but also pinpoint that shot like Charlotte North, I think is awesome to see. And then the field vision. Right? Like you get the Andy Aldaves from the University of National Champions, and like her ability to read the field like a point guard is just awesome to see. What do you want to wrap this up? What do you want sports PTs to know about what it is that lacrosse strength and conditioning coaches do?
I think I would love for them to know, like, strength matters, but practicing speed matters as well. Like, you can't just, it's not just about improving your abilities to apply and withstand forces if you can't just freaking sprint, right? But what I love that, like, Austin does is he's able to integrate, right? Like, those, you know, if you're holding the stick, right? Like whether it's a stick or a PVC pipe, you have to be able to move your hands and coordinate those with your foot patterns. Yeah. So I think if you're just keeping it in a vacuum of, okay, footwork here, curve drills here. Well, no, at some point you got to put the stick in hands because that will inherently change the movements. I take a stick out of my athlete's hands and they run different. Yeah. And so, you know, how can you practice those skills and again, get that full picture and integrate those implements effectively?
Yeah. Well, what I love about this conversation is that's the first time I think in the pod you've mentioned the word stick. And I think you have to be able to allow those worlds to coalesce. You have to be able to move and you have to be able to move aggressively and fast. And I love the way you put it, create force and withstand force. But then introduce the sports specificity of putting a stick in. I think the biggest mistake we make as sports PTs in the lacrosse world is we're going to do single leg balance and we're going to put a stick in your hand and call it sports specificity. And there's a time and place to introduce the stick and the sports specific skills. And there's a time and a place to not, because you spent the last hour not talking about sticks, just talking about moving like an athlete. And then at the end, you bring it home with saying, oh, by the way, once they do those things, now put a stick in their hand, see how they do, and then get back to the lab and put it all together. And I think that's an awesome lesson and applies to every sport. Like it applies to baseball, it applies to lacrosse, it applies to football. So pick and choose your spots of when you're getting sport specific, what is the goal of the task at hand? And then start to dissect it from there. So I think that's really well put. It's a great point to close on. Tell everyone, the millions of sports PTs that are listening, where they can find Coach Shattuck.
Well, I'm pretty heavily involved in the NSCA Lacrosse Special Interest Group. So we have an Instagram account, but we also have a Facebook page. So NSCA Lacrosse SIG. And then I do have a personal Instagram, but I tend to just put a lot of personal stuff on there, and then I'll, you know, retweet or, you know, repost all of the cool things that my athletes are doing. So,
and what is that?
That is Nicole Lilia, Nicole _ LILIA. That's my middle name. So you can find me there, but yeah.
Awesome. Coach Shattuck, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your knowledge, your wisdom, and your approach. What I really think, if we do this again in another year or so, it will sound totally different. And I think that's a great thing. I think your growth mindset is apparent. So thank you for sharing that with all of our listeners. True Sports family, thank you guys so much. Let us know how we did. Let Coach Nicole know how she did. Obviously, you know now where to find her. Let us know what you want to hear, what you want to hear more of, you want to hear less of, what we did outstandingly, and we will double down. 2024 at True Sports is the year of doubling down on what it is we do well. So thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Coach.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.